Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, September 24th, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Ah, that would be me.
I have no life. My brother Johnny took my life.
That sounds like a really sad story, and maybe we can get to it at some point. But for right now, it's time for another Q&A show. This time around, I have a really great bunch of correspondents who share their sex and relationship concerns with us, and I go out of my way to make my responses informative, enriching, and maybe even a little entertaining.
I don't care! I ain't no freaking monument to justice! I lost my hand! I lost my bride! Johnny has his hand! Johnny has his bride! You want me to take my heartbreak, put it away, and forget?
You need to take a chill pill there, friend. So, before we begin, a word from our sponsor. This week's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's Sex Advice and DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Our sponsor today is me. You'll have to excuse this shameless self-promotion, but I wanted to call your attention to a standing invitation for everyone in my audience to support and underwrite these marvelous shows. I'm exceptionally proud of the quality programming I've been bringing you, my international audience, for over 5 years. I've presented a variety of extraordinarily informative, enriching, and entertaining shows, interesting interviews, enlightening Q&A, and even some product reviews. I mean, where else can you find this sort of diverse, sex-positive programming? And all of it always comes to you absolutely free.
I like it well done.
That's so good to know. Okay, so right about now you're probably asking yourself, hey, Dr. Dick, how can I help and support and underwrite this effort? Well, I'll tell you. Just mosey on over to either one of my sites, DrDickSexAdvice.com or DrDickSexToyReviews.com, and look for the donate button. It's a blue, heart-shaped icon. Click on it, make your contribution, any amount will do. But for those folks donating $50 or more, they will receive a swell thank you gift. Excellent personal lube, smutty porn DVDs, wonderful sex toys, or some delicious erotica. Be the first one on your block to join me in bringing the world this fun, informative, and enlightening programming. Now, before we can turn our attention to my correspondence, I'd like to remind you of the toll-free lickety-split sex advice podcast voicemail hotline at 866-422-5680. Got a question or comment? Want to rant or rave for a bit? Or maybe you just want to talk dirty for a minute or two? Why not get it off your chest and give Dr. Dick a call at 866-422-5680. Now, there's no need to be shy, my friends, because this is voicemail. No human is going to answer your call, least of all me. And besides, calling the free hotline will almost guarantee you a place in one of my podcasts. Okay, on with the show. First, let's mosey on over to the big, giant email machine. Okay, first up is Joy, obviously a female. We don't know her age or where she writes from. But she writes, my question is this. I've been sleeping with my boyfriend for well over a year. In recent months, he has been using meth. For the first couple of months, sex was amazing. We have always had a great sex life, but in the past 5 or 6 weeks, he has stopped wanting to do anything other than have me give him oral sex. I almost feel like a hooker. He avoids kissing me and doesn't show any interest in my pleasure at all. Is this the meth? I asked him why he didn't want to be with me. And he responds, "What's wrong with me enjoying a blowjob? But it's every single time and it's making me feel awful. What can I do?" So your meth-addled boyfriend lets you blow him, but he doesn't do anything to pleasure you? Seriously? And you wonder why your once great sex life has degenerated into servicing him and nothing else. Come on, Joy. I think you know the answer to your question without asking me, right? This is what meth does. I mean, besides destroying a person's sexual response cycle, it makes folks selfish and thoughtless. My advice to you is get out while you still have your self-respect intact, because if you don't, you will be a lost soul just like him. Good luck. Now, here's an exchange I had with a fellow who identifies himself simply as A.H. I don't know his age, and right now, I don't know where he lives. He writes, "My girlfriend and I have a very volatile relationship. One night, in a drunken fight, I chose to throw the meanest thing I could at her. I referenced the fact that she has herpes and called her diseased, etc. She now tells me that she has never been happy with our sex life and we are incompatible. I felt awful the second I said it, and I fear that things will never be the same again. She has no intimate feelings for me any longer. In a recent counseling session, our first, she said that she had no longer any feelings of desire for me. I was astounded to hear this, since I assumed she cut me off because of anger. I have been trying to get her to talk so that we can fix things, but to no avail. How can I possibly regain her trust and revive her sexual feelings for me? She says I'm her best friend, and she tells me that she loves me, but whenever I want to talk or the chance to be intimate arises, she retreats as if she were disgusted or angry. If she will not discuss the issue with me openly or agree to work on this together, how can I fix the situation? I love her, but I am dying here, trying to make things right. Is that even possible?" So, okay, A.H., I think I need to ask some follow-up questions before I hazard a guess as to the viability of your relationship. It's true that your insult was a real low blow, but somehow, I think if your relationship were on an even keel up until that point, the insult would have indeed stung, but it wouldn't have been fatal. Do you guys have a history of fighting unfairly like this? How big a role does alcohol play in your relationship? I'm guessing this isn't the first time booze has fueled a fight. Am I right? How much truth is there in her statement that she is not happy with your sex life? Have there been any other indications before this incident that would have led you to think that all is not well in paradise? Was she being pleasured as much as you in your partnered sex life? Who would get off first most of the time? You or her? Things may never be the same between the two of you after this incident, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. This could be an opportunity for the two of you to face your difficulties and resolve them. This can, of course, only happen if she gives you a second chance. That's why I need to ask the question about your history of unfair fighting. If what you are asking for is not a second chance, but another chance, after you blew all previous chances, I'd say your luck has pretty much run out. If she won't even discuss the issue, then it's up to you to do some work on yourself, by yourself. Not in the hopes that this will win her back, although it might, but to address some of the stuff that is seething just under your surface. You need to work on this with a sex-positive therapist. I'd guess that you have some self-esteem issues, substance abuse issues, anger management issues, and maybe even some sexual performance issues that you could work on first in an effort to remake yourself into a happier, healthier, more confident, and more trustworthy person before approaching her again. Good luck. So OAH writes back and he says, yes, we drink a lot and have agreed to cut back as a result of one counseling session. She now cites examples of my failure to please her as well as me being oblivious to her needs over the past 3 years. I guess I'm stupid enough to have thought she enjoyed making me come without me returning the favor on a consistent basis. Oh, really? He goes on, I'd be more than happy to try to please her in bed as long as she gives me some direction and feedback while we are having sex. She has declared her love for me and her commitment to save our relationship, but offers no suggestions other than a sex therapist. I can't find a true sex therapist in our area, Mobile, Alabama. You don't say. Am I missing something when I think it might be a lot of fun to practice at pleasing her? I know I can be really attentive and affectionate, but I fear that she's locked me out in this area. I do have some problems with anger, but no performance issues and no self-esteem problems. I do drink a lot. I have made great sacrifices in my career to stay with her, and I hope I didn't pass on a chance for a new life for absolutely nothing. We love each other, but how long can I go without sex? She went without for 6 years before she met me. If only I could find that sex therapist. Thanks for all the follow-up information, AH. What you guys need is indeed a sex therapist, and you know that already, but if you can't find one where you live, I understand that, especially Mobile, Alabama, for God's sakes. So, would either or both of you like to work with me? At least 50% of my private practice is with clients I see remotely, that is, by phone or through Skype. For more information about this option, see the Therapy Available tab in the header of my site. It will provide you with all the information that you need to make an intelligent decision about working with me. Good luck. Now, in light of this exchange with AH, I thought I'd like to riff a little bit on a handful of effective communication techniques. Number one, let your partner know how you feel. For example, I am really hurt and confused that you don't want to make love to me anymore. It's important that you not attack your partner, but rather state your feelings as clearly and as carefully as you can. Always remember to use I statements, such as I miss having sex with you. Own your feelings and refrain from comments like you make me feel bad, angry, hurt, or whatever else you might be feeling. Avoid questions like, what's wrong with you that you never want to have sex with me anymore? Number two, don't make assumptions. These close off an open discussion and can cause your partner to shut down. Avoid questions that only invite a yes and no response. For example, say, I was hoping that we could talk about why we are not having sex anymore, instead of, I think you're not interested in sex because I'm no longer attractive to you. Number three, choosing the proper time and place to have your discussion is as important as the discussion itself. Don't have the conversation when you're doing something else, like eating, or driving, or cleaning out the garage. If necessary, arrange or schedule a time when you can create a private space to talk. I always recommend to my clients that they have this chat on a walk, out in nature, if at all possible. The secret to this is that you won't be facing one another and your voices won't be reverberating in a room, making them sound louder or more threatening than they really are. Number four, avoid accusations and blaming. Your partner is not to fault any more than you are. Start by taking responsibility for your failings before you ask your partner to accept his or her culpability. Your relationship is a team effort, so solve your problems as a team. Number five, pay attention to your body language. Be conscious of your partner's body language. A great deal of what you're saying isn't coming from your mouth, but from your stance. How you're holding your arms, and your facial expressions. Ask yourself, do you appear threatening, defensive, or uncomfortable? Is your partner in a threatening, defensive, or uncomfortable position? If tension is building, stop the conversation immediately. Call for a timeout and do some deep breathing together. I also suggest that you get up and change your position, shaking yourself out a bit when you do so. You will automatically reset your body language and you can start fresh. Be alert to one another's body language, and this will help you gauge how your conversation is going. Finally, number six, ask for and offer concrete suggestions on how to make things better. Rather than telling your partner how things should be, make a proposal. People are much more likely to respond in a positive manner if they see options as opposed to dictates. This is especially true in intimate relationships. Alrighty, next we hear from Reba. She's 30 years old and she writes from the Midwest, which kind of narrows things way down. She writes, I think my youngest son is a homosexual. He's only 6 years old, but he is not like other boys his age. He likes to play dress-up in my dresses and shoes. He even gotten into my makeup case a couple of times. He is the sweetest, kindest, and most gentle boy, but he is very, very girly. Some of my husband's relatives make fun of him, and it breaks my heart. I don't want him to grow up and have a difficult life. I have two questions. Can someone as young as my son actually be homosexual? And is there anything that I can do to help him get over this? Reba, I'm of the mind that effeminate behaviors in young boys are not necessarily predictors of sexual orientation later in life. They certainly can be. But it's not always the case. I sense that most of your concern comes from what others think of your boy. You claim your son is sweet, gentle, and kind. My question to you is, ma'am, why is that not enough? We all know that there are gender-contrary stereotypes, sissy boys, who may be solitary or bookish. There are those with an interest in dolls and makeup and dresses. Others avoid sports or rough play with other boys. And in little girls, there's that tomboy thing. Some girls have a penchant for guns and tools and cars and trucks. Some like hanging out with the boys and are always ready for a physical tussle. Others may have an aversion to all the perfumed, delicate trappings of femininity. But do these behaviors signal a child's budding sexual preferences? I suggest not. But they also certainly could be. My question to you, Reba, is why are you so afraid of what you see in your son? Does the specter of your son's adult homosexuality creep you out? Are you afraid because this is unfamiliar territory? And if so, who really needs to change? You or your son? I'm guessing that if indeed your boy is the sweet, kind, and sensitive person you make him out to be, then you have a responsibility to love, protect, and defend him as he struggles to be his authentic self. As you suggest, things aren't going to be easy for him. Children can be even more intolerant than ignorant adults. But if you try to make him like other boys, if you try to make him hide his proclivities or otherwise deny himself, you'll only add to his frustrations and considerable burden and not help alleviate it. Developmental scientists have identified that now gay adults often exhibited gender-contrary behaviors as children. So you might be right, your son might very well grow up to be gay. Lots of us gay adults tended to know that we were very different even much earlier than age 6. As an aside, may I turn you on to an absolutely brilliant website called Born Gay, Born This Way, .blogspot.com. This is a photo essay project for gay adults of all genders to submit children's childhood pictures and stories reflecting the memories and early beginnings of their innate LGBTQ selves. I'll include a link to this site in today's podcast posting so you can check it out. Now, some researchers in the area of sexual development often refer to gender non-conforming children as pre-homosexual. It's a pretty awful term for any number of reasons, but it is at least fairly accurate. Well, there have been some interesting studies that link childhood gender-contrary behaviors in adult sexual orientation. It is super important to keep in mind that these behaviors don't identify the cause of homosexuality. So if you have it in your mind that prohibiting your son his dress-up fantasy outlet or trying to break him of his sissiness will only put him straight, so to speak, you have another thing coming. There are strong genetic factors at work in everyone's sexual preferences, gay, straight, and everyone in between. So if you're asking yourself what causes homosexuality, I can assure you that whatever it is also causes heterosexuality. Sexual orientation is on a continuum. It is not an either-or proposition. Another interesting fact is that all young children of both sexes enjoy fantasy and or pretend play. But the roles that girls and boys take on within the fantasy contexts are already clearly gender segregated as early as 2 years of age. So girls tend to enact the role of mothers, ballerinas, fairy princesses, and boys tend to prefer more masculine characters such as soldiers and superheroes. Not surprisingly, therefore, boys naturally select other boys for playmates, and girls would much rather play with other girls than with boys. There's one thing that I want to point out. Sexual orientation is not the same thing as gender orientation. There are some young people who exhibit gender nonconformity who are not homosexual, but who are transgender. But I'll save that discussion for another time. It is fashionable these days to say that one is born gay, but I think there's a bit more to this than what meets the eye. I understand why we say we are born this way. It helps us put ourselves on the same par as our heterosexual peers who believe that they were born this way. It also helps us deflect the still rampant discrimination in our culture against anyone who is different. But if we follow that logic, we are bound to miss the complex postnatal development factors that make up any person's sexual preferences. So my last piece of advice to you, Reba, is that you cultivate your son's natural talents. Maybe he'll grow up to be a famous actor, or designer, or artist. But even if he grows up with no other distinction other than being another garden variety gay man, he will know that he was loved and nurtured by his parents despite his quirkiness. Good luck. Next, we hear from Jackson, who's 68, and he writes from Daytona Beach. He says, "I am a widower. My wife of 30 years died 4 years ago. I live in a very nice senior complex surrounded by many very attractive, available women my age and older. I've been on dates, and I have had sex numerous times since my wife has died. I guess you could say I am enjoying myself. But all of that came crashing down last week. I tested positive for a venereal disease, and now I am full of shame. I never thought this would happen to me at this age. I have no idea how to tell my partners that I have had a dose of the clap. What should I do?" Well, the first thing you do, Jackson, is jettison the shame. Here's the thing. STIs, or sexually transmitted infections, happen to sexually active people, period. By the way, we stopped calling them venereal diseases about 100 years ago. And if you think that only young people are at risk for STIs, think again, my friend. Rates are on the rise among our senior and elder population, too. The second thing you need to do is buck up and have a frank discussion with each and every one of your lovely lady friends. While it's not the easiest or most pleasant chat to have, you need to do it anyhow. It's imperative that you tell them the truth. I'm guessing that some of your lady friends are passing around STIs without even knowing that they are carriers. This can be devastating to a closed community like an upscale senior complex. An STI can become epidemic in your community faster than you can say, "I got me some of that clap, don't you know?" The third thing you need to do is scoot on down to the drugstore and pick yourself up a big carton of condoms, and then practice safe sex each and every time you dip your wick. With more of us living longer and healthier lives and death and divorce a reality of life, many of us seniors and elders are finding new sexual partners much later in life than our parents' generation. An active sex life comes with a myriad of health benefits. But there's also health risks. All sexually active people with multiple partners, regardless of age, need to practice safe sex and get tested for STIs every 6 months. I tell this to college kids, and I tell this to their grandparents too. Take, for instance, chlamydia. A common enough bacterial STI is rapidly on the rise among all age groups and has more than doubled in those in the over 50 age group. Gonorrhea, or the clap, as we used to call it, another bacterial infection, has also seen an increase in the over 50 crowd. Older people nowadays are increasingly likely to be single or experiencing relationship changes. It's way easier to meet new partners these days, and thanks to advances in healthcare, symptoms of menopause and erectile dysfunction no longer spell the end to an active sex life. But despite this, education campaigns about safe sex are generally aimed only at younger people. This is a real shame because older people are as vulnerable, if not more so. They are more likely not to know the symptoms of an infection, or they may be too embarrassed to seek treatment. Studies show that middle-aged women between 40 and 70 were more likely to agree to sex without a condom with a new partner compared to younger women 18 to 39. Similarly, researchers show that nearly 40% of men over 40 who have casual sex do not use a condom. In addition, older women may no longer be concerned about becoming pregnant and have less of an incentive to use a condom compared to younger women. But hey, condoms aren't just for birth control. Most people know about condoms, but seniors and elders may lack the skills around raising the subject of safe sex and being able to negotiate their use at the actual time they are needed. As with most things in life, prevention is way better than a cure. Here's something else to remember, Jackson. When broaching the topic of safe sex and STI prevention with a new partner, you should know that your partner, unless she's been living under a rock, will probably be thinking the same thing as you. Breaking the ice about safe sex can often be a relief for you both. Besides, taking the lead in this discussion will demonstrate that you are well informed, as well as being very courteous. And that, my friend, is a very attractive combination. I would also like to point out that the signs and symptoms of some STIs can be mistaken as normal part of aging, such as vaginal soreness or irregular bleeding. And sometimes there is no discernible symptoms of an infection. But just because you don't have symptoms doesn't mean that you won't pass the infection on to your partner. So here is my advice for all sexually active seniors and elders who are enjoying multiple partners. 1. If you have unprotected sex, get tested for STIs every 6 months. This may involve giving urine samples to test for chlamydia, an examination of your genital area for signs of genital warts, or a swab of your genitals to test for herpes or gonorrhea. A blood test will be required to test for syphilis, HIV, and hepatitis B. 2, if you are starting a new relationship, suggest your partner get tested. 3, use a condom with your new partner until you both have been tested for STIs and are certain that neither of you are having unprotected sex outside of the relationship. If you have symptoms that you're concerned about, such as urethral discharges in men or vaginal discharges in women, sores or lumps on your genitals, pain when passing urine, or abdominal pain in women, see your physician ASAP. Good luck. Finally, we hear from Tammy. She's 42 and she writes from beautiful downtown Tacoma. I attended one of your presentations at Castle Megastore in the spring. It was a lot of fun, thank you. I have a question, though. You kept talking about greening our sex lives. I'm not sure what you meant by that. Could you help me understand what you mean? Thanks. Hey, good question, Tammy. When I talk about greening our sex lives, I'm talking about being more environmentally conscious about the products we choose and how we dispose of the waste of our sex lives. Consider how much trash our love life produces. Condoms, empty bottles of lube and other intimate products, all the adult product packaging, and the inevitable broke-down sex toys, too. It's downright frightful when you stop to think about it. Consider something as simple as the pill also has its downside. While oral contraception is wonderful and empowering for women, it also means that millions of women are pissing out synthetic estrogen every single day, hormones that end up feminizing male fish and reducing their fertility rates. Same goes for any other form of hormonal birth control. Now, latex condoms are, of course, your best bet for preventing unwanted surprises, from babies to herpes. While latex comes from the sap of a rubber tree, which you would think would be very eco-friendly, there are additives in your love gloves that prohibit their decomposition. You want to hear something scary? Consider the hundreds of millions of condoms that slip into bodies of water every single year thanks to sewer overflows because us menfolk flush our safeties. Keep in mind that pure polyurethane-based condoms and contraceptive sponges create all kinds of nasty toxins in the manufacture and incineration, and they never ever break down. If you're not a vegetarian and aren't trying to prevent STDs, lambskin condoms are biodegradable as well as a great birth control method. If you're with a trusted partner and your doctor thinks that you're a good candidate, an IUD is probably the soundest echo option for birth control. One small copper device versus the hormonal releasing versions lasts up to 10 years. IUDs are about 99% effective, but hurt like hell going in and taken out. The majority of jelly dildos and vibrators are softened using high levels of endocrine-disturbing phthalates. Lead and cambium have also been found in jelly and vinyl toys. And while cyberskin might feel oh so lifelike, it is made with the vilest plastic of all, PVC. Solid, high-quality silicon is much easier on the planet. And lovely glass, aluminum, and wooden dildos are the friendliest of all and can even be recycled if you tire of them. Plus, all these materials last much longer than lesser quality materials. If you're into vibrators, I suggest you invest in a rechargeable kind. If you insist on using your favorite battery-operated one, make sure that you use rechargeable batteries. If you're using drugstore brands of lube, they may be loaded with petrochemicals and sometimes animal-based glycerin and lactic acid. Check the labels, why don't you? Instead, look for condom-friendly lubes with organic ingredients like ginseng. There are flavored and unflavored lubes out there that contain grapefruit seed extract, which encourages healthy body chemistry. Listen, make this your mantra. Buy organic whenever possible, and remember, the fewer additives, the better. This is particularly true for body paints and massage balms and oils. With just a little effort on your part, you'll be fucking without screwing the planet. Good luck. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Now, here's a little programming note. Next week, Wednesday, I'll feature another fantastic sex wisdom show and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Sex Advice and Dr. Dick's Sex Toy Reviews.com.
You got any whiskey? How about you give me a glass of whiskey?
I can do that, and let me finish up here first. Simply put, I need your help to continue to provide shows like the one you just heard. But you may be asking yourself, hey, why should I make a donation? Well, I'll tell you. Infrastructure and administration costs for a free site like this are astronomical. So if you like what you see and hear, if you enjoy all the wonderful features of DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com, then I invite you to make a modest one-time donation online. We suggest a donation between $20 and $50, but any amount will be gladly accepted. This is a one-time donation. There are no automatic credit card renewals or processing fees. And you can be certain that every dime that you donate will go to support this valuable sex-positive effort. Finally, your donation underscores your social conscience. Your sponsorship helps disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages throughout the entire world. I thank you in advance for your generosity. Until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.